All right, we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Hey Amun Aleph by the two dots. He sealed the Devar Acher. Actually, the Balei Tosafot, we discussed this on the Mishnah, and they say it on the previous Amud. They're not sure whether the word is hisio or hishio. They don't know if to spell with a shin or a sin, whether it's hisio like hasa, to carry over, or to push him over to another topic, or whether it's hishio from Vatoma Isha Nachash Hishi Ani Vauchel. And Chava says that the snake either duped me or convinced me or seduced me into eating from the tree that you say we shouldn't eat from. And so do over here. He pulled the wool over his eyes. He convinced him, or he persuaded him to move to a new topic and take him off the topic that they were on. So my kitovim dodecha miyayin. The pasuk that he was quoting was from Shir HaShirim, which is Yishakenim Nishikot Pihu, Kitovim Dodecha Miyayin. Remember in the Mishnah, he was asking Rabbi Yishmael, what's the proper way to pronounce the pasuk? Is it Kitovim Dodecha Miyayin? Is it Kitovim Dodayach Miyayin? Whether it's male or female conjugation. And we said in the Mishnah that that made a difference as to whom is speaking. Because if a Kodesh Baruch was speaking to Knesset Yisrael, it would be in the female, because that's the mashal in Shir HaShirim, and vice versa. If it was Kitovim Dodecha Miyayin, if it was written in the male, then it would be Knesset Yisrael speaking to Kodesh Baruch Hu. So the conclusion of the Mishnah over there, based on Rabbi Yeshua, was that it was Kitovim Dodecha Miyayin. That we read it as in the male conjugation, and it's Knesset Yisrael speaking to Kodesh Baruch Hu. You should give me of the kisses of your mouth, because your love is more delightful than drinking wine. That would be the explanation then if you read in the male conjugation. And now the Gemara goes on to explain that. My kitovim dodecha miyayin. Ki atar avdimi amar amra kinesit Yisrael lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Klal Yisrael says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono shel olam. Arivim alai divrei dodecha yoter miyayinah shel Torah. That more beloved to me, or more appealing, are the words of your beloved more than the wine of Torah. Or in essence, what they were saying is Torah shebaal peh, or the divrei chachamim are more precious than yeinah shel Torah, the Torah shebichtav, or the Torah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So maishna haikra dishayle. So why did he particularly ask him about this pasuk? He's referencing him to the beginning of the pasuk. Yishakeni minishikot piyu. Amarlei Yishmael achi chashok siftotecha. Rabbi Yeshua says to Rabbi Yishmael, Yishmael, my brother, chashok siftotecha. You should belt bind your lips, zo bzu, one to the other. Ve'ati bahel lehashiv. And don't be so quick to respond. Look in Rashi, he translates it as, al tikdakdei lakshotlo. Don't be so particular to question about it. If you translate it just literally, it means, don't be so quick to ask the questions, or don't be so quick to ask the questions about this gezerah. Rashi says, don't dig in so deep into the gezerah in order to ask questions. My daima, amar ula, v'idemar of Shmuel bar Ava, gezerah chadashahi. It was a brand new gezerah. Ve'ei mifakpakim ba. And we don't cast aspersions about it. We don't question or challenge the gezerah. So here you have Rashi translates interesting as in terms of the etymology of the word. He says, ve'ei mifakpakim ba is, mifakpakim lashon chatita bar satum, to scrape out from a something that's closed up, or the fash for show, and then to investigate it. It's almost like taking a sample in order to check it out, or like a biopsy to figure out what's there. That's what the word mifakpek means, according to Rashi, in terms of its etymology. Even though the word today, the way that we use it in the modern Hebrew, as well as the way it seems that the Gemara uses it, is ein mifakpimpa, is that we don't question it, we don't have doubts about it. The way that the Gemara is presenting it now is that there was a brand new gzerah on the cheeses of the Akum, and the Chachamim had instituted it. Rabbi Yishmael, who was a young Talmud Chacham at the time, starts to ask what's the reason behind it. Rabbi Yehoshua is pushing back against him, not because there is no reason, but he wants to push back against him because he doesn't want to disclose the reason. And that's based on what we just said here, that Rav Shmuel bar Abba says that there was a gzerah chadasha, it was a brand new gzerah. When he had a brand new gzerah, they didn't want to disclose the tam in order that the people would start to abide by the gzerah first. What you want is compliance by the people, that the gzerah, when it's in force, will be complied with. Once the people have complied with the gzerah, then you can disclose the reason behind the gzerah. So the Gemara's question was, why did he pick this pasuk? You could have picked psukim, as the Gemara in the Darim says, that there are five psukim, shem lehem hachreya. One of those psukim was actually in last week's parsha with regards to the menorah. And so the pasuk is Ein lo achreya. It doesn't have an easy answer as to which way it's read. Obviously, today we have the trump in the Chumash, which forces you to read it one way because of the way that it's punctuated in the trump. The Gemara Nedarim speaks about that being one of the psukim that they're in the Mechreya. The Rishonim say over here, that's what he should have asked him. If you wanted to ask him about psukim or ask him about something that was difficult and take him off topic, that's what they should have done. So why did he pick the pasuk from Shir HaShirim? So it seems to be that there is a dual reason here. One is the fact that Yishakenu Minishikot Piho. Number one is you should clasp your lips. You should tighten up your lips and don't be so quick to question the Chachamim or so quick to respond to these things. And number two is Kitovim Dodecha Miyayin. That the words of the Chachamim are even greater than Yainashul Torah. And in so he hinted to him both items. That first of all, that he should be silent. And number two is the fact that the words of the Chachamim are so precious, even more precious than the Yena Shel Torah, so that you have to have a Munat Chachamim here, and you have to back off a little bit. And that's why he picked these psukim. And so that's what Rabbi Yeshua is pushing against Rabbi Shmuel over here. He's saying that we're not going to tell you the reason, even though he answers him and goes back and forth. It's clear that he's being Duchehim, as Bali Tosafot say. He's just trying to push him off so that he doesn't continue to ask the question. So he gives him some reason. That reason's knocked off by Rabbi Ishmael. Gives him a second reason, which is also discarded by Rabbi Ishmael. And then Rabbi Yeshua is his shiol advar acher, moves him on to a new topic. And that is because he doesn't want to disclose the information or give him the real answer to the question. So now the Gemara wants to understand, once we've gone through that and explained what he's doing, what was the reason behind the gzeirah? Because in the end, Rabbi Yeshua never discloses to Rabbi Shmuel what the reason was. And so that's what the Gemara is doing now, which is, my gzeirta. What was the point of this gzeirah? I'm Rabbi Shimon Pazi, I'm Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Mishum Nikur. It's a problem of gilui. We're going back to the issues that we had earlier with the snake depositing venom. And we're worried about that too with regards to the chalav, with regards to the milk. That the snake will deposit venom into the milk, and then that will curdle into cheese, and then you'll have these cheeses that have the venom of the snake in it. Now, the assumption being that a Jew would be more careful about gilui, and he would keep his milk covered, or his liquids covered, and that way he would protect against the problem of gilui. On the other hand, the non-Jew, who is not so makpid on gilui, he would not do that, and therefore you risk the issues with regards to venom. We said before, the Bali Tosafot noted, that don't the non-Jews also want to protect their lives, which shows you that this issue of gilui was not a high probability. It was a very low probability. So the Ovdei Chachamim relied on the fact that it was a very low probability and wasn't worth the effort to protect against it. Chachamim were much more careful about it and said that it's worthwhile protecting against it because of that low probability event. It's worth protecting against it. And that was the nature of this gzeirah in terms of the cheese. And even though, as the Bali Tosafot point out, that before we said that even though they're not makpid on gilui, they are makpid on cleanliness, and that would be enough to solve the problem of gilui. Nevertheless, he says by chalav, maybe they weren't so makpid, because in the end, either they're going to curdle it into cheese, or they're going to filter it before they make it into cheese. And so that will solve the problem of cleanliness, but does not solve the problem of gilui, because the eris, the venom of the snake, is not caught in the filters that they were using. And so therefore, the problem will exist with the akum, or the cheese of the akum. Balei malei mishum nikur. So then why didn't he just tell him that that was the problem? Kidu ula. That's because of ula damar ula. Kigazre gzerta bemarova. This is what we just explained before in the previous statement of ula, which is that when they put a gzera in Eretz Yisrael into place, lo migalu tama atreso yarche chato. They would delay disclosing the reason behind the gzera for 12 months. Dilma ika inish delo svirle. Because there are people who may not abide by it, agree with it, acquiesce to the position of the Chachamim, and then they would end up dismissing it or denigrating it in some way. That would make it that the people would not comply with the gzerah because other people are being dismissive of the gzerah. But if you have gzerah without any reason that's given, then people are going to comply just because of their emunat Chachamim. So what they wanted was that the people accept, and here you see Rashi says, Kuli ame savre kamu rabbonon bimilta, that the rabbonon knew what they were doing, dati mine churva, Because they must have figured out that if we don't abide by this, something terrible is going to happen. We just don't know the reason. We don't understand the reason, but there's tremendous emunat chachamim here. That today, I don't know if this would work as well. Maybe in the Sephardi communities it would take hold. I don't know if the Ashkenazi communities this would take hold. But basically what the Gemara is proposing here is that there's an assumption of the chachamim's ability to get to the bottom of something like this and to put in takanot and gzerot in place. Not have to disclose the reasoning behind it, not have to explain it, but people would accept that the Chachamim must have known what they were doing, and therefore they would accept the Takana. Then once the Takana was complied with by the people, a year later, they would disclose the reason that's associated with the Gzeira. So that's the reason he didn't disclose the real reason, and he tried to sidetrack him with other reasons, but this is the reason. Gadefa Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah, simple translation of the word Migadef, means to curse. But that's a very strong lashon that's used here. And here at some the word migadef does not mean to curse, but rather there is a mesorah from the Geonim that migadef was a terminology used to clean off one's plate or to wipe off one's plate. So that's what it was. Migadef by Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah waved his hand in disagreement as if he was wiping away his plate or washing away his plate, that he disagreed. He made a motion that showed that he completely disagreed with this. And you can see in the Rabbeinu Chananu, he actually has a different girsah here, which is Megadek by Rabbi Abau, rather than Rabbi Yirmiyah. Elamiyata yvesha tishtare. That's the case. Then dry cheese should be mutar. Yashan tishtare. Aged should also be mutar. The Amri Chanina, Yavesh mutar. The dry cheese should be mutar. Anyway, you call the Yavesh because it doesn't allow it to dry out. Yashan mutar, aged is okay. It doesn't allow it to age. The way Rashi explains it over here is that the Vesha is referring to the cheese, which is that if you have cheese that is dry, then you don't have to worry about gilui anymore because the venom of the snake is liquid. If it's already dry and there's no liquid there, then it's clear that there was no venom of the snake in this milk that was curdled. And so the dryness would be enough evidence of the fact that there's no problem. So why not just have the cheese dry out, and then you would know for sure that there's not a problem with gilui. And then the yashan aspect here is referencing back to the beer and the wine, which is by yayin v'shechar. We said before that the venom of the snake doesn't allow them to age. So if they do age, then that is an indication that there is no gilui, there's no venom of the snake inside of them. Now, even though before when we spoke about the beer, the Chachamim made an institution, Gzera Yashan Atu Chadash, they made a Gzera of the older beer because of the newer beer. How come over here they don't worry about that with regards to the cheese? Ben Yashan Lechadash. That over there, there's reason to do it because it's not so clear between newer beer and aged beer. To the older stuff and the newer stuff, kamo gabe gvina. By cheese, it's very obvious the difference between aged cheese and newer cheese. And obviously, in order for the cheese to be dry, then it would have to age. Now here, implicit in the Tosafot a little bit, is the fact that the venom of the snake does prevent the aging of the cheese, but we'll see later that many of the Mishonim speak about that, or the Baalei Tosafot reject it, and say that never does the Gemara ever say that venom of a snake causes the cheese, or the milk, not to curdle into cheese. Therefore, he dismisses that idea, because the Gemara never says it. The only thing it says over here is that it doesn't allow it to age. Again, Rashi thinks that's speaking about beer and wine. You could argue that it's also speaking about cheese, that the venom would cause the cheese to go bad because of the bacteria or enzymes that are in the venom that wouldn't allow the cheese to age properly or store properly. And so therefore, it could be even referencing to the cheese. And that's what we just said in the Baalei Tosafot, why they think that there's no gzeira of yashan atu chadash here by cheese, because there it's clear that there's a distinction between them, as opposed to beer, where it's not clear where the threshold is between new beer and aged beer. So then we have Amar Rabbi Chanina. So here you have a major, major machloket amongst the Mishonim as to what Rabbi Chanina is going to say. And the truth is that according to the Rabbeinu Chanina, it's Parik Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah is the one who gave the answer over here. He had the questioner be Rabbi Abau, and then the answer being brought by Rabbi Yirmiyah. We have the question brought by Rabbi Yirmiyah, and then answered by Rabbi Chanina. You can see there are other girsaot, including the Tosafot, according to the Mesorat HaShas, had a girsa similar to that of the Rabbeinu Chanina, which is that over here it said, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah himself is giving a reason. It's impossible that it doesn't have some whey on the cheese. And the way Rashi explains this is that there is a possibility that you have non-kosher milk that is mixed up with the kosher milk. We know that kosher milk curdles into cheese. Non-kosher milk does not curdle into cheese. And that's because cow milk or kosher milk in general has a lower sugar content. And that lower sugar content allows it to curdle into cheese. Non-kosher milk has a higher sugar content. So instead of it curdling into cheese, it tends to ferment instead. And so we know that if you have non-kosher milk, it's not going to curdle into cheese. What Rashi suggests over here is the problem was that there is non-kosher milk mixed into the kosher milk. And the problem now is that it curdles. So they say, why to worry about it? The kosher cheese curdles. The non-kosher cheese doesn't curdle. So then you would know if there's anything left that's not curdling, that's clearly that there was non-kosher milk in here. There was not only kosher milk. So the Gemara thought non-kosher milk would leave it with liquid, and that liquid would be enough to identify the non-kosher milk. So Rabbi Chanina comes along and says, L'fishiyev shalab lo tzichtzuchei chalab. It's impossible that it doesn't have whey. Even normally, when you have kosher milk that is curdled into cheese, you don't get an absolute block of cheese with nothing left over. You get the water that is in the milk left over when the curdled cheese happens. The cheese takes mostly the cream and all of the content of the milk and makes it into cheese, but leaves over some of the excess water or whey that is associated with the curdling of the milk. So what Rashi is indicating is that Rabbi Chanina now is giving an alternate answer to the gzeira. Instead of saying it's a problem of nikur, of giloy and the venom of the snake, the problem is that we're worried about them mixing in, not kosher milk. Mar says that will be easily identifiable because the milk won't curdle, and you'll know that there's non-kosher milk. Mar says it won't be so obvious because even in kosher milk, when it curdles, the whey is left over, so there'll be liquid there. And you won't be able to tell whether the liquid left over is just simply the residue or the residual of the curdled kosher milk, or whether there's non-kosher milk that's left over, and that's why it won't be identifiable. That's what Rashi explains over here. The Ramban, on the other hand, gives another reason, but also indicates that Rabbi Chanina or Rabbi Yirmiya, whichever girsa you have over here, is giving an alternate reason, which is that they used to, in order to make the cheese moist, put non-kosher milk on top of it. By placing non-kosher milk around it, it made the cheese look more appealing and more moist, and they could use non-kosher milk for that because they didn't want it to curdle. They didn't need it to curdle. It was just to give it moisture. And that was the problem. The Balei Tosafot reject these answers based on what the Rabbeinu Tam says, which is that over here, you would have expected the Gemara to say Ella. We have learned this a number of times, that when the Gemara wants to change its mind or reject that what it said before, it says Ella. And especially according to the Girsa of the Rabbeinu Chananu or the Balei Tosafot, which says Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, then Rabbi Yirmiya rejected the Giloy issue, and then comes along and says something. If he says something over here, he should say Ella Amar Rabbi Yirmiya. Rather, Rabbi Yirmiya suggests this is the problem. And therefore, the Balei Tosafot believe that Rabbi Yirmiya over here is explaining the problem of Giloy. And he's giving you the reason why you can't test for Giloy and you can't test for the venom of the snake. We said before that the venom of the snake will not curdle or will not allow it to dry out because there will be liquid of the venom left over. Where Rashi describes the Chalav Tameh, it's going to be in between the cracks of the cheese. Or even the venom could be found in the cracks of the cheese. But nevertheless, the Balei Tosafot say, even if you don't say that, even if it's on top, what's going to end up happening, and Rabbi Chanina suggests here, is that even in cheese that dries out and curdles, there's always liquid that's left over, the whey that's left over. And if you say that there's whey left over, how are you going to know whether the leftover liquid was venom or was the leftover liquid whey? And therefore, you won't be able to identify the venom that's there. In that way, Rabbi Yirmiya is supporting the statement, according to Rabbi Shua ben Levi, that the problem is Nikur. And based on that, he says the explanation for why you can't test for the Giloy is because of the fact that there is always liquid around the cheese, and that prevents you from being able to test it. And so we're worried about Nikur. Nikur means either holes or punctures in the cheese where the snake could have deposited his venom. And we can't be certain that there's no venom here, even if the cheese dries out, because the cheese never really dries out. When you curdle cheese, there's always liquid left over. And we can't differentiate between the whey, which is just the wastewater of the curdling cheese, versus the venom itself. Now we have an alternate reason. Ushmuel amar, mipnei shemamidin ota ba'or kevat nevela. The problem is that they curdle it inside the stomach of a nevela. Gemara says from this, hakeva gufa sharya. That implies that the stomach itself, or what the contents of the stomach, would be fine. So here, when you curdle the milk into cheese, you need some sort of enzyme or some sort of trigger in order to have it curdle. So many times they use the lining of the stomach or the waste water, the rennet that is found in the stomach, because they contained enzymes, ruminants in their stomachs, the enzymes that are there that help with the digestion process also trigger the curdling of milk into cheese. So they used to utilize those in the curdling of cheese. What Shmuel is saying is the problem is that they were curdling the cheese in the skins or the linings of the stomach, because that had the enzymes that were still attached to it or buried in it, and that would cause a curdling of the milk into cheese. The implications of that are that the liquid that's in the stomach would have been fine in terms of curdling the cheese. You could have used that. And the Gemara wants to know, Mi'amar Shmuel Achi? Did Shmuel really say that? That the perish or the liquid contents of the stomach are fine? V'hatnan. Don't we have a Mishnah in Chulin? Kibat ha'oveid kochavim v'shel nevela harizo asura. The stomachs of an oveid kochavim or a nevela are problematic. V'havinon bo. And we question that. Atu dove kochavim lav nevelahi. Isn't it by definition that the stomachs of the Ovdei Kochavim, we're not talking about the person himself, speaking about the stomachs of the animals that they own, aren't they by definition a nevela? V'amar Shmuel chadoktani. Shmuel answers that problem and says it's really one statement, which is, kebat shchitat Ovdei Kochavim nevela asura. That the keba of the shchita of the Ovdei Kochavim is a nevela, and therefore it is asura. Now, over there, the Mishnah makes no distinction between the or keba, and the keba itself. The implications of that Mishnah and Chulin are that even the contents or the liquids that are found in the stomach are also problematic. And those enzymes that are used in curdling would be problematic. So you have a stira in Shmuel. Shmuel over here says the problem is the skin or the lining of the stomach. And over there he says the problem is even the perish, the liquid that's found in the stomach. The rennet itself is problematic. So how do you reconcile between the two statements of Shmuel? Lokasha, that's not a problem. Kan kodem chazara, kan achar chazara. That was before they changed their mind. That was after they changed their mind. Umishna lozaza mimkoma. And the Mishnah never changes its position or is never taken out of circulation. In our Mishnah over here, you have a discussion between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Ishmael. And Rabbi Yeshua says the problem is that they make the cheese in the kebat nevela. Rabbi Ishmael then says back to him, what's the problem with that? We have a statement from the Chachamim that says that a Kohen who's not so particular can gulp down the contents of the stomach of an Olah. An Olah, which is a higher threshold of Isur, Isur Achila and Isur Hana'ah, over there we still allow the Kohen to gulp down the contents of the stomach. That means that clearly by an Avela, the contents of the stomach should be Mutar. And after that point, Rabbi Yeshua at that point changes his mind and agrees based on the criticism of Rabbi Ishmael. And so what the Gemara is saying is that the Mishnah in Chulin was taught by Rabbi Yeshua before he was criticized or checked by Rabbi Ishmael. And so that was the original Mishnah, but that Mishnah was then discarded once we had the conversation between Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Yeshua over here, where Rabbi Ishmael tells Rabbi Yeshua that doesn't work because of the Kebat Ha'ulah. And then Rabbi Ishmael changed his mind at that point in time. But since the Mishnah was already in place in Chulin, the Gemara does not upend that Mishnah. So Shmuel is explaining the Mishnah in Chulin, even though that Mishnah is before Rabbi Yeshua changed his mind. After Rabbi Yeshua changed his mind, then he agrees that the contents of the stomach are not problematic. And so now the statement of Shmuel is that the Gzeirah is in place, not because of the liquids in the stomach. That is fine. You could use the rennet in the stomach to make the cheeses. The problem is if they use the stomach of the nevela itself, because then you would be using the nevela as a ma'amid, and using the nevela as a ma'amid, or in order to cause curdling, would be problematic, because the ma'amid is something that is asur or a davar isur. So if you use the lining of the stomach or the stomach of the nevela itself to do the curdling, that would be problematic. But if you use the liquid, the perish, that which is the rennet inside of the stomach, and you can take it out and then curdle the cheese, that would be totally fine. So the gzeira was that we were afraid they were going to use the stomach or the stomach linings of the nevela in order to curdle the cheese. So many of the Rishonim, you can see this in the Baal Tosfot, ask as well, why is it even in a kosher animal it's okay? In a kosher animal, if you take the stomach of the kosher animal and you curdle the cheese in the stomach of the kosher animal, you have basar and chalav now. You have chalav, which is the milk that you're using to curdle the cheese, and you have the stomach or the lining of the stomach of the kosher animal, which is the ma'amid, is the cause of the curdling of the cheese, and that's basar. So even if it's a kosher animal, why is it okay? So there are different ways to deal with this. The Ramban, Baalei Tosafot over here, suggests that the difference is that basar b'chalav is only asur min haTorah in bishul. The bishul of basar b'chalav is asur. Mixing basar b'chalav together, bitzonein, is only a problem midrabanan. So now over here, we know that the issue is not an issue of bishul together. Simply a question that the mamid, the curdling agent, is basar, and the object being curdled is machalav, which is cold and cold being put together. And therefore, the Balei Tosfot suggest that it's only a din derabanan. And since it's only a din derabanan, they weren't going to be gozer on a din derabanan for the possibility of basar b'chalav if you curdle inside of the stomach of a kosher animal. That's the way that the Balei Tosfot suggest that there is a distinction between nevela, which is an isur doraita, versus basar b'chalav b'tzonei, which is only an isur derabanan. So if a Jew takes the rennet of the nevela, it would have been fine. If a non-Jew hands you the cheese, we're uncertain as to whether you use the rennet of the nevela, or use the stomach, or the lining of the stomach of the nevela. Had he used the stomach or the lining, it would have been problematic. Had he used the rennet, it would have been fine, but we don't know. And since we don't know, that's the gzera. The gzera is don't buy the non-kosher cheeses, don't eat the non-kosher cheeses because of this risk that they were mamied it in the stomach of a nevela. So again, the question that we have here is, why is that different than basar b'chalav? Tosfot says that it's a difference between din d'oraita and a din d'rabbanan. On the other hand, we spoke about on the Mishnah, and this is a distinction that's brought by the Rimi Gash, the Balei Mor, and others that suggest that the distinction is that nevela inherently is asur. And therefore, if the ma'mid, the thing that causes the curdling, is isur, nevela, then that's a problem. Even if it gives over no flavor into the cheese, the mere fact that it's so essential to the making of the cheese, like the yeast or the sourdough that causes the rising or the rising agent of bread, even if it imparts no flavor to it, we still say it's asur if that rising agent was asur. So if you use a rising agent that's chametz, or use a rising agent that is tevel, or any other isur or la, then we say that the bread is asur, even if it imparted no flavor to the bread, just because it was so essential to the making of the bread and being machmitz the bread. Similarly over here, when it comes to a nevela, the curdling of the milk is the essential process that's taking place. If that essential process was caused by something that's asur, nevela, then the item will be asur, even if it imparts no flavor. On the other hand, when you deal with basar b'chalav, basar independently and chalav independently are not asur. It's only when you cook them together that they become asur. So if here, where the basar is the mamit, it's not imparting any flavor into the milk, it's just the cause or the agent of the curdling of the milk. So if you look at the basar independently, was anything wrong with the agent? No, it was basar. So that agent is not inherently asur. And since it's het there, when it causes the milk to curdle, there's no problem because the meat gives over no flavor into the milk. And for that reason, the curdling of milk on a kosher animal's stomach is not problematic because there's no isur that's causing the curdling. Even though if they were combined together, there would be an isur, they never are combined together. Their flavors are never passed between each other. And for that reason, the kosher animal's stomach is fine, whereas the non-kosher animal or the nevela's stomach is problematic because nevela is isur. Whereas basar and chalav separately are both heterim, and since the basar and chalav are only being triggered one by the other, but never mixed together, or never taking on the flavor, that's not problematic. Tosfot does bring from the Rabbeinu Tam that there is a distinction in the liquids that are found inside of the stomach of the ruminant, which is that those that are karush, that already start to curdle themselves inside of the animal, those would be mutar. But chalav tzalul, the clear liquid or the clear milk that's inside of there, that would be problematic. Nevertheless, in the end, when they were matir any liquid that was found inside the stomach of the ruminant, that includes both the liquids that already begun to curdle in there, as well as just clear liquids or clear milk that is found in the stomach of the animal. So now, the Gemara continues with another option as to what the reason is. This we saw back on the bottom of Chafteh Amud Aleph when we're discussing the different memrot, whether it was from Malkiyo or Rav Malkiya. So over here we had one of these statements, was as Rav Malkiya, Mishmed Rav Adar Ba'ava Amar Mipnei, Shemachlikin Paneh B'Shuman Chazir. It was a practice of the non-Jews that after they curdled the cheese, they used to wipe pig fat on the outside, whether to give it flavor, whether to give it a certain amount of shine or moisture look to it. And that's the problem with buying cheeses from the non-Jews. It's not because of the cheese itself, but it's how they process the cheese or what they do to the cheese in the end. Because they use vinegar as the curdling agent. They don't always use rennet. They don't always use the lining of the stomach. Sometimes they use chometz. Chometz comes from wine. And then you have a problem of stam yenam being the curdling agent. Nachman bar Yitzchak gamar, ibnei shemamidin oto bisraf haorla. Because they use as the curdling agent, orla, which is a fruit tree in its first 3 years of production, the fruit that comes out of that tree, they used to use the sap from the orla as the curdling agent. And that, of course, is a sore for a Jew. Come on. Who is that like? Kihai Tano, like this Tano, that's not. We have a Mishnah in Orla. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Hamamid Bisrafa Orla, Asur. Person who uses the sap of the Orla in order to make the cheese, Bibnei Shul Peri, because it's a fruit. It is a production or produce of the tree, and therefore the Srafa Orla is something that's Asur Bahana'a, like Orla in general. And if you use it or utilize it to curdle the milk, that would be problematic. Mar says, Afilu Teimer Rabbi Yeshua. You could even say Rabbi Yeshua would be the author of this position, meaning he's the one who argues on Rabbi Eliezer in that Mishnah. Adkan lo pligi Rabbi Yeshua le de Rabbi Eliezer, that Rabbi Yeshua only argues on Rabbi Eliezer there with regards to Orla, Ela Bekatfa de Guza. That's only true when we're speaking about the Kataf, the Saraf, that's the translation into Aramaic, of the Guza. Aval Bekatfa de Peri Modi. But when it comes to the Saraf of the fruits, that he agrees. So Rashi says over here, the katfa, the guza, is from the geza, from the trunk. It's that the sap that comes out of the tree itself, that he disagrees and says does not have a issue of orla. On the other hand, when it comes to the sap or the juices of the fruit, that he does agree. Behainu ditnan, and that's what we see in the Mishnah in Orla. Amar Rav Yeshua, shamati b'ferush, I heard explicitly, shamamid b'sraf ha'alin u'b'sraf ha'ikarin. You're allowed to use the sap of the leaves or the sap of the roots, mutar. All of that is mutar. Ubisrafa pagim, but when it comes to the sap of the immature fruits or the unripened fruits, asur mishubim shehu peri, because that sap or that liquid is considered to be a part and parcel of the fruit, and that means that it is problematic in terms of being orla or getting hana from it. If they use that as the ma'amit, if they use that as the curdling agent, then it's going to be problematic, as the Bali Tosafot say on the top here. Even though it's the orla of a non-Jew, it's not even a Jew's orla, nevertheless, the Jew is restricted from eating orla, even if it's in non-Jewish hands. So Gemara asks, Ben Rav Chista, Ben Rav Nachman, whether the reason given by Rav Chista, which is that they use the kometz, the vinegar, as a curdling agent, according to Rav Nachman, that they use the orla as the curdling agent, now whether you add in Bar Yitzchak over here, is really subject to the Machloket Rashi and the Balei Tosafot as to who the Stam Rav Nachman and Shas is. Is Stam Rav Nachman and Shas Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov or Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak? So according to the Balei Tosafot who say that Rav Stam Rav Nachman and Shas is Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov, then you can't write Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak over here. According to Rashi, it wouldn't be a problem to have that girsa. Titaser behana'a. If they are right, then why is the cheese only asur ba'achila, not a surbana according to the Chachamim? Because according to them, you're either using stam yenam or you're using orla, both of which have an isur hana'a, not just an isur achila. The same question that Rabbi Yishmael asked Rabbi Yeshua when he said that the problem was that they're mamid. They curdle it in the stomachs of the avodah zarah. So he says to him, if you're right about that reason, then it should not only be isur achila, it should be an isur hana'a. And that's not what we find. Kasha. The Gemara leaves that as an unresolved issue, a strong question against the positions of Rav Chista and Rav Nachman. Now, going back to the previous Amud, the Balei Tosafot then ask, what exactly is the problem with non-kosher cheeses? Based on the way that our Gemara lays out here, and a combo of axioms that the Tosafot has, it turns out that the Balei Tosafot say that non-kosher cheese should be totally fine. V'omer Yotam, ki achshav, lo matzin utam pashut li'isur b'gvinat ha'oveg kochavim. We don't have a straightforward way to explain why we don't eat non-kosher cheeses. Da'atam ha'isur hava mishum nikur ki Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Here's one of the assumptions of the Balei Tosafot, that in the end we paskin like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, which is that the reason to asur cheese is because of the possibility that the snake deposited venom into the milk before the cheese was made, or he bit the cheese and deposited the venom into the cheese. The kaimalon halacha ki Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, because we have a principle that the halacha is always like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, after gabe Rabbi Yochanan, even when he argues with Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan carries a lot of weight. If you have Rav Rabbi Yochanan, halacha ki Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yochanan, halacha ki Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan trumps many amuraim with regards to halacha, but we have a principle that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi sits above Rabbi Yochanan. Kosher kein gabe Shmuel. So the dissenting opinion was Shmuel. If you have Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi versus Shmuel, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is going to carry the day over Shmuel, because Rabbi Yochanan would trump Shmuel, just like Rabbi Yochanan trumps Rav in Isurim. So if Rabbi Yochanan trumps Rav and Rav trumps Shmuel, then Rabbi Yochanan trumps Shmuel. And if Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi trumps Rabbi Yochanan, he also trumps Shmuel over here. So according to the Baal Tosafot, remember, there's only the reason of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, which is Nikur. Then Rabbi Chanina is only supporting that position of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And the second reason was given by Shmuel. He says, well, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi versus Shmuel, the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. B'chein pasak Rabbeinu Chananu, he says Rabbeinu Chananu passed that way. B'chein b'seder tanaim v'omoraim, pasak halacha Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi b'kol makom. That halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi wherever he appears. B'gam divrei Rav Adar ba'ava inam kum. What about the next reason that was given by Rav Adar ba'ava, that the problem was that they put Shuman Chazir on the cheese? Why don't we worry about that? Because Rav Adar ba'ava would have been a batra. He would have been a later amora, and therefore he would have carried weight in this situation. So what he says is very interesting. This isn't Rav Adar ba'ava was telling me the student of Rava, because then he would have been a batra, an amora batra, and the halacha would have been like him. But rather, we see that he's not that way, because Rav Nachman was the Rebbe of Rava, and yet the Gemara, in sequencing who spoke over here, brings Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, then Shmuel, then Rav Adar ba'ava, then Rav Nachman. So by bringing Rav Nachman afterwards, shows you that Rav Adar ba'ava here is not the Talmud of Rava, because he must have been an earlier Rav Adar ba'ava, and therefore he carries no weight in this discussion. And then what about Rav Chista and Rav Nachman? Why don't they carry weight in the discussion? Because the Gemara asks questions on them. The Gemara rejected both of their positions and left it as a kushya. So then the only position left is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is going to trump. In this case, the lochas like him. The leka leichesh nami vishum eruv chalav tamei. Baal Tosafot say you're not going to have to worry about mixing in non-kosher milk. Because he said, I already told you that Rashi makes no sense. Rashi before, if you remember, when Rashi said that the chashash of Rabbi Chanina is that they mixed in non-kosher milk, and the non-kosher milk doesn't curdle, we'll never be able to distinguish it because of the way that's there. Baal Tosafot say, what crazy Akum is going to put non-kosher milk into there? He knows it doesn't curdle. So why in his right mind would he ever put non-kosher milk in order to have it curdle? Because it doesn't curdle. And he would be caught. And everybody would know it. So why would he even bother to waste the milk? Because it's not going to work to make it into cheese. So based on that, the Baal Tosafot rejected Rashi's explanation before, as we said. And that's why the Ramban suggested that the problem was that they actually put the chalav tamei on the outside. They weren't trying to curdle it. They were trying to make it moist. But the same way that they do it with the fats of the pig, they used to do with non-kosher milk to make it moist on the outside. But the Baal Tosafot, the Shita Tam, they believe that Chalav Tameh is not an issue here with regards to cheese. And their assumption that Rabbi Chanina is only supporting the position of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, they come to the conclusion that the Locha is like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And as we discussed before, the Baal Tosafot believe that there's no issue of Giloi anymore. Va'anam she'en nechashim mitzuim b'neinu. We don't have snakes amongst us. We don't have any snakes here in Europe. Ein lachush mishum Giloi. We don't have to worry about Giloi at all. That's a principle, another axiom of the Tosafot over here. Ve'en lo damar davar shebiminyan hu. Well, what are you going to tell me? It's a gzera that was put in place. You can't undermine a gzera that was put in place. Tzarech minyan acher la'atiro. You need a new beit din or a new minyan to undo it. Kivadayu kishasru tichila lo asru el makom shenaf nechashim mitzuim. The intent of the gzera originally was only put in place in a place where there are snakes. Kamosha Afresh the command gabi Yayin Nesech. As I'll explain later on by Yayin Nesech. So what you have here is the Baal Tosafot coming to the conclusion that non-kosher cheeses should be totally fine. There's no reason to restrict non-kosher cheeses. We don't worry about Giloi anymore. Again, that's a big assumption of the Baal Tosafot, that Giloi only applies in places where there are snakes. Number two is, even though it was a Gzerah, the Gzerah is undermined. Now this goes to a principle with regards to Gzerot, that when can a Gzerah fall apart by itself? And when does a Gzerah have to take a Minyan or someone else to undo it? And the distinction that I've heard, both from Rav Asher Weiss, I've heard this from Schechter also, is that it depends on the nature of the Gzerah. If the Gzerah is put in place as a reason, if the whole Gzerah is a reason itself, that's the case here. The whole reason for the Gzerah is Nikur, then when that is not applicable, then the Gzerah goes away. If there's a Gzerah put in place, and then the Gzerah has a reason to it, and maybe that reason doesn't apply, the Gzerah does not disappear. So if the whole Gzerah is premised on a reason, and that reason is inapplicable, then the Gzerah won't apply. That's what the Baal Tosafot is suggesting over here. The whole reason for the Gzerah of the cheese is a Nechashim, and Nechashim aren't here, so the Gzerah is not applicable to us at all, because that was the whole intent of the original Gzerah. had it been a gzerah of just simply cheeses, and then the reason behind it might have been that there was nikor, that way that you explain it, then you would not be able to unwind the gzerah. The gzerah is a fixed gzerah. The reason behind it is separate from the gzerah itself. But if the gzerah is the reason, then you can unwind the gzerah even without another minyan. That's what the Balei Tosfot seem to be suggesting over here. So they made two assumptions. One assumption is that the problem of the gzerah is nikur, is venom. Number two is that venom is no longer applicable to us. And number three is the fact that if that's true, then the gzerah is not applicable, that the gzerah doesn't stand anyway. Based on that, they say the non-kosher cheeses should be totally fine for us. Then he goes on to say that Harav Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Chaim suggests that maybe the reason is sheish tam tzat lesor mivneshim mochim hakeba be'ora, that when they curdle the cheese inside of the stomachs of the animal, they salt them. Ve'ika be'isur de basar bechalav de meliach hariu keroteach. Because when you salt something, if it sits or it soaks in that salted liquid, that brine, kavush, over a period of time, if it soaks like that, it has the status of bishul. Maybe only the Rabbanan, but it has the status of bishul. And then you have now have a problem of bishul basar bechalav. Because now if they're curdling it, even in the kosher stomachs, if they put salt in there, then you have a problem with basar bechalav, because then it's going to leach the flavor of the basar into the milk because of the fact that it was salted. And that is a problem maybe of basar bechalav. Ve'ani ra'ite, he says, mikomot, she'im ma'midim minivlat davar acher meliach, that they actually curdle the cheese in the stomachs of pigs that were salted. So that also create a problem, because if you're salting it inside the nevela, even the residue of the nevela, if once you salt it and then bring it in, that salting process is going to cause a leaching of the basar nevela, or the basar that's there, even if it's a kosher animal, into the cheese, and that would be the problem. The Balei Tosfot try to find maybe a reason that possibly it's problematic, but if, for instance, in a case where you don't salt the keba, then it wouldn't be a problem according to the Balei Tosfot, and non-kosher cheeses should be totally fine according to the Balei Tosfot. Now, you can argue on the Balei Tosfot for a number of reasons, and that's what the Rishonim do. Rishonim argue on the Balei Tosfot, first of all, on their last assumption, which is the fact that the gzera went away, and that for some reason the gzera is no longer applicable. There are many Rishonim believe that's not true, that the gzera here, even though it was gilui and we don't have snakes, nevertheless, the gzera is still in place because the gzera was put in place irrespective of giloy or snakes. And you might even be able to separate between cheese and other items. Remember, in the Mishnah, the Mishnah never gives you the gzera. It says there's a gzera, it never gives you the reason. The reason is only brought by the Amoraim at a later time. And based on that, the reason was separate from the gzera. And maybe the gzera stands, even though maybe by giloy of yayin and giloy by water, that is the reason of gzera, that might go away. Over here by the cheese, that's only given as a later understanding or explanation for it. If that's the case, then cheese should remain asur, even though the reason for the gzera went away. That's the first thing you could argue on them with, is whether the gzera is no longer applicable of giloy. The second thing you could argue with them about, whether you can undermine a gzera such as that. You can argue on either one of those points, and Rishonim argue on the Balei Tosfot on both of those points. The second thing you could argue on them is the reason for it. Over here, the Balei Tosfot assume that the halacha said Rav Shimon ben Levi, and based on that, of course, the only reason here is giloy. You could argue that the reason is either because of Shmuel, or because of what we saw from Rav Adu Ba'ava, or even possibly Rabbi Yirmiyah or Rabbi Chanina over here, who give the reason based on the Ramban, or the way that Rashi explains it, is either because it was non-kosher milk that was put into the curdling process, or non-kosher milk that was spilled on top of it afterwards, or the fact that they used to put the Shumana Chazir on top. All of those reasons would still be applicable. If that's the case, the gzera would still be intact if you don't say halacha k'Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, discarding everyone else. So that assumption of the Balei Tosfot also could be challenged. All those reasons would make it that the cheeses that the goyim make would be not kosher. But it does tell you that if non-kosher cheeses are supervised, that they can be kosher, because only kosher milk curdles. As long as the process is pure and not done inside of the kebat or la, it's only used by the perish, the enzymes, or the liquid that comes out, it would be totally fine to have non-kosher cheeses. All right, now the Gemara continues and says, Darash of Nachman Breit of Chista, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk that comes afterwards, Reach Shmanecha Tovim, is that we already had the first pasuk, which was Yishakenu Nishikot Piyo Ki Tovim Tadecha Miyayin, which is pasuk Bet and Ferek Aleph of Shir Shirim. Remember that Rabbi Yoshua, and based on the Balei Tosafot, responds to Rabbi Shmuel and says that you're wrong by saying that it's Ki Tovim Dodayich Miyayin, because the next pasuk says, Reach Shmanecha Tovim, Shemen Turak Shemecha, Ken Alamot Ayivucha. So over there it says, Vareach Shmanecha Tovim. So there at Shmanecha, that proves that it's Dodecha in the previous Pasuk. The Baal Tosafot pointed out to us that's because the end of the Pasuk says, Alkein Alamot Ehevucha, which makes it clear that you speak in the male conjugation over here, because the Alamot loved you, which is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that means that it's Knesset Israel speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in these Pesukim. So if it's Vareach Shmanecha Tovim, then it must be Kitovim Dodecha Miyayin. So now the Gemara says about that, Rav Nachman Breid, Rav Chista says, what's meant by the Reach Shmanecha Tovim? Lama Tamar Chacham Domeh Litzulchit Shel Plaitein? How come the Tamar Chacham is compared to the perfume bottles of the iterant salesmen that sell perfume? Migula Recha Nodef. When it's open, the aromatic perfume comes out of there, and you smell it when it's open. Michuseh Ein Recha Nodef. If it's all closed up, then you don't smell it. It's all contained within the bottle. So now that seems to be a mashal to a Talmud Chacham. A Talmud Chacham that gives out and is teaching and giving of his Torah, then his fragrance spreads and touches other people. If he keeps it all to himself, then his fragrance does not spread out. Below Od, Ela Dvarim Shemechusim Imenu Mitgalim Lo. Things that were otherwise covered or hidden from him, then are exposed to him. The way Rashi explains it over here is, Ma'atzman, below Torah. It happens by itself without any extra effort. Kishum alam dam. When you teach students, then not only does your fragrance spread and other people know about you and other people are affected by you, but also you are affected by your own teaching. And that is either that the students make you wiser or you get a siyata dishmaya, which allows you insights that you wouldn't have had otherwise. So that teaching of itself is not only beneficial in the fact that your fragrance touches other people, it's also beneficial to you yourself, the source of the fragrance, because you're let in on these hidden secrets of Torah or insights that you wouldn't have otherwise had, either because of the feedback of the students or because, as Rashi says, Matzman, you suddenly get these eureka moments, these great insights, without any effort put in. The Baal Tosafot explained it slightly differently and say, Darim Achusimi Menu Perish Bnei Adam Migalim Lo Razehem. People tell their secrets over to you, Fishin Nehenimi Menu Eitzav Etushia, because they seek the counsel of this individual and they love the Torah that he teaches. So because of the Torah that he's teaching and all those other things, people will come now to seek counsel from him because of the great respect and pleasure that they get from him. Shinemar Alamot Aivucha, that the Alamot, the young maidens, will love you. Karibe, don't read Alamot, Ela Alamot. Those things that are Alum, that are hidden, they will be exposed to you. Velo Od, Ela Shamalach Mavet Olavo. Only that, but the angel of death loves him. Shinemar Alamot Aivucha. Karibe Al Mavet. Don't read Alamot, but rather Al Mavet, either being above death or the man of death. Aivucha will love you. Below Od, Ela, Shinochel, Shne Ulamot. He inherits two worlds, Olam Azeb, Olam Abba. Echad Olam Azeb, Echad Olam Abba. Shnemar, Alamot, Karibe, Olamot. Don't read it as Alamot, but rather as Olamot. So here they have all different versions of the word Alamot being translated. If you don't put Nekudot on it, that you can read it Almavet. You can read it as Olamot, or you can read it as Alumot. And that tells you all the benefits that the Talmud Chacham gets. Now that's a continuation of the explanation that Tovim Dodechem Yain, that the words of the Chachamim are more precious than the Yeinah Shel Torah. Then it continues the next puzzle, the Reach Shmanecha Tovim Shemen Turach Shemecha, that the fragrance, the aroma of the perfume of your Shemen is so good, Shemen Turach Shemecha, that the Shemen is spread or is poured, and that's your name getting out. That is the fragrance or your teaching of Torah takes your name or expands your name or gets you name recognition, because people are touched by the Torah that you're teaching. And that's this indication that the person should open up and let out his Torah and give to others and not hold it in, because then Shemen Turach Shemecha, and then Alkein Alamot Aivucha. And the result of that will be all these rewards that we just spoke about. Okay, now the next Mishnah deals with Fel Dvarim, Shovdei Kochavim Asurim, Bein Isuram Isur Hana'ah. Opposed to the previous Mishnah, which said these are issues that are with the Ovdei Kochavim, they're not only Asur Achila Shtia, but they're also Asur Ba'ana. Over here, we have items that are Asur Ba'achila Shtia, but they're not Asur Ba'ana. Chalav Shechalbo Oved Kochavim, Ben Yisrael Roeu. This is otherwise known as Chalav Akum. Chalav Akum is restricted in Achila Shtia. It is not restricted in Hana'a. So if there's nobody watching the goy from milking the cow, or milking the animals, you cannot trust that milk. Bapat, vashemen shelehen, and as well as the bread and the oil of theirs is also restricted. The Gemara will say that that was a gzera put in place, mishum chatnot. Pat akum and shemen akum are restricted because we don't want people interacting and then socializing and then intermarrying. And that's why there is a problem of pat akum and shemen akum. Now here you have a line in the Mishnah, very unclear whether it belongs here, which is Rabbi Beit Dino Hetiru HaShemen. Rabbi and his Beit Din were matir the gzera of Shemen. They unwound the gzera of Shemen. Now, as Rashi points out over here, that Rabbi never did that. And it was really Rabbi's grandson, Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, who is an Amora, who is the one that undermines that gzera of Shemen. And therefore, it doesn't belong in a Mishnah, because a Mishnah would not contain the words of an Amora. And so therefore, Rashi, if you look in there, says, Lo Garsinan. This isn't part of the Girsa, because it doesn't belong in the Mishnah. It's true that Rabbi Yehuda Nesia was Matir of Shemen, but that's Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, the Amora, the grandson of Rabbi. But Rabbi himself didn't do it, and it doesn't belong in the Mishnah over here. That actually leads to a major machloket in the Rishonim as to whether to keep the Girsa in. Rashi obviously says no, based on the fact that it's Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. And that's based on the Tosefta that's going to come up in the Gemara in Daf Lamed Chet, which clearly says that it was Rabbi Yehuda Nesia and not Rabbi himself. The Ramban says that that's nice that Rashi wants to take it out of the Girsa of the Mishnah, but every Mishnah that we found and every Ktav Yad that we have has this line in it. So you can't just take it out if every Mishnah has it in it. So now, how do you explain this? So the answer might be the Girsa Shir should not be Rabbi, but rather the Girsa should be Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. And the Rashbam in the Tosafot on Tamar's Daf notes that very possibly it was added in later by the Amoraim. But the Tosefet itself was added by the Amoraim in the time of the Amoraim, and it became appended to the Mishnah because they wanted to explain, despite the fact that the Mishnah says that Shemen Akum is problematic, nevertheless, they baked in Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, who was an Amora, did take it out. So it's not part of the original canonization of the Mishnah by Rabbi, but it was added in later on by the Amorim, and it should read Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, and not Rabbi. Whereas the Ramban suggests, even possibly, that Rabbi Yehuda Nesia also had the nickname, or Toar, or description of Rabbi. Just like Rabbi, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, had that description, so did Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. And therefore, maybe even the Girsa of Rabbi is correct over here, even though it was a later Rabbi, not Rabbi as we know him, the canonizer of the Mishnah, rather, Rabbi, who was Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. That is the controversy surrounding this. Veshlakot, in that they cook, is considered to be ashur, which is Bishul Akum. Bishul Akum is ashur because of the fact of Chatnot. Ukvashim shedarkam atet l'tokhan yayin, v'chometz, and anything that is pickled is also problematic because they either put wine or vinegar in them. Vitarit, trufa. And if you have tarit, which is a type or species of fish, which is similar to the tuna, if it is scrambled or mixed up, that's problematic because you can no longer identify whether it was a kosher fish or a non-kosher fish that was put in there. Bitzir she'en ba daga kalbit, shotet tebo, or if it is fish brine, that is from the kosher fish, then they will be what's called a kalbit, swimming around in there. A kalbit is a small fish, or some small sherets, that swims or lives inside of the fish brine of kosher fish. And they had a mesorah that only lived inside of kosher fish brine. It would not be inside of the non-kosher fish brine. So whether, according to Rashi, it's this little fish that swims around in there, it's a non-kosher fish. But its being in there clearly identifies the brine as being kosher brine. If you don't have that in there, then you can't take the brine from the non-Jew, because there's no evidence of the fact that it is kosher brine. Or others suggest that they used to leave the fish in the brine to show you which fish caused the brine to be made. And so if it was a kosher fish that's in there, if you find a kosher fish in there, it's fine. If it's a non-kosher fish in there, then it's not fine. Vachilik, the chilik is a fish that we saw before. These are very small fish that are kosher. And as Rashi noted before, they're called the sultanit. And it does not have fins and scales when it's very young, but it does grow fins and scales later on. And we know, we have a mesorah that that is mutar. Nevertheless, the problem is that when you have them catching them in the nets, there are many fish that are caught together, and those fish are not distinguishable between the kosher and non-kosher ones because they both don't have fins and scales. So when the balabait puts them together, then that chilik is problematic because he doesn't distinguish between the kosher and the non-kosher fish. And even if it's 1 in 1,000, he still puts that non-kosher fish into the mix. And that's problematic. We saw in yesterday's daf that the chilik of the uman, if he's a professional chiluk maker, that would be fine because he has a reputation to uphold. And he knows people will notice the flavor difference, and he can actually spot the difference between them, and he will not mix them up. The koret shel chiltit, which is a type of fruit that they cut up with a knife, And that fruit, when it's cut up with the knife itself has, whether it's residues of fat on the knife, and when they cut it, those fats get into the fruit, because it is a dover chorif. Umelach shal kondit, and salt from this location, or this type of salt, which the Gemara will discuss, whether that's a problem if they mix in wine or other things with it. What's the problem with this salt? Harelo asurim, all of these are restricted. Bein isra and isra hana'a. But that restriction is not a isra hana'a, it's only an isra of achila and shtiyah. So now the Gemara says, the chalav, the mainechushla. Why is chalav akum asur? Imishum ichlufei. It's a problem that he's going to swap out the kosher milk with the non-kosher milk. Tahor chivar, tamei yaruk. Turns out that kosher milk, or cow's milk, is much whiter than non-kosher milk. So simply the color would tell you the difference between whether it's kosher milk or non-kosher milk. You can see that by the color. So if you're worried about him swapping out the cow's milk for some other milk, you would know right away. The Baal Tosafot say, why doesn't the Gemara ask over here about nichur? Why doesn't it just say that the problem is the depositing of the venom, giloy, of the snake, the same way that it said it by the case of the cheese? The Baal Tosafot would say, enochanami, that could have been a reason. But they wanted to bring a reason that's applicable even if the goy, for instance, milked the animal and then walks straight over to the Jew and hands him the milk. There you still have, might have a problem of chalav akum, which we'll see in a second, but you won't have a problem of nichur. The goy was always watching the milk. He had it in his hand the whole time. There's no giloy, and he hands it to the Jew. So there are instances where giloy would not apply, yet the gezerah over here would still apply of chalav akum. That's why the Gemara goes down a different path of not using giloy as the reason for a chalav. So first of all, we said maybe you're worried about him swapping it out. That's not a problem because the colors of the milk are different. Imishum iruve, if you're worried about him mixing up the milks, meaning that he's going to mix in kosher milk and non-kosher milk together, nekum, then just curdle it and you'll know. Damar mar chalav tohor omeid. When it comes to kosher milk, it curdles. Chalav tamei eino omeid. When it comes to non-kosher milk, it does not curdle. Where it says, ikag bayi legvina hachanami. If he needs it for cheese, that would be fine. Hachamayin skinan, the kabay lele kamcha. He needs it to eat or drink. He doesn't want the milk made into cheese. He doesn't need cheese. If he needed cheese, you're right. Enochanami could do the test, and that would solve your problem. Whereas, if you need it for milk, then that's not going to help you in that situation, because you can't curdle it, then you don't have milk anymore. Vinishko mine kali. Take a sample from it. Vinekum. And then try to curdle it. Kevin bitahor, nami ika nisyuve. Since when you have kosher milk and it curdles into cheese, there's still whey that is left over, liquid that's left over, the lokaimi that doesn't curdle. Lekalamekam Allah, the milta. We can't then figure out whether it's non-kosher milk that didn't curdle or whether it was the whey that didn't curdle. If that's the case, you're not going to be able to determine why there was leftover liquids. If you can't do that, then you can't tell whether it was non-kosher milk mixed in here. Because even if the non-kosher milk's in there, it doesn't curdle. Even with kosher milk, totally, it would curdle and leave over liquid. So liquid left over could be either be whey or it could be non-kosher milk, and you wouldn't be able to know which one it was. So even taking a sample and curdling it, it's not going to help you. So vibay tema, afilu tema kaboyla de gvina. Even in a case where you need it for cheese, ika dekai bene atve. The problem is that it gets stuck in the crevices or between the cracks. According to Rashi, it's ben atve. It's in the actual cheese itself, in the cracks, the crevices inside the cheese. The Rabbeinu Chananel says, how dekai beni beni begvina kamin tipin. Those little drops that you find on the cheese or inside of the cheese, they could be non-kosher milk that's left over. It doesn't have to be whey, it could be non-kosher milk, and that's the problem according to the Rabbeinu Chananel, which is that there might be milk that's left over, and that milk that's left over gets trapped or covered inside of the cracks of the cheese. So again, even if you make it into full cheese, even if you could figure out that there's no liquid left around it, there's still a problem that there's liquid embedded inside the cheese. And that liquid between the cracks or inside of the cheese, again, you won't know if that's whey or whether that's non-kosher milk. Or based on the Gemara before, maybe even venom of a snake, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between them. And therefore, you couldn't know for certain, even if you needed it for cheese, as to whether it was kosher milk or non-kosher milk. And Tosafot differentiates that from cheese that we spoke about at the beginning of today's daf, because over there, the Ovei Kochavim has no incentive to put in milk that is tamei, because he was making cheese. And so therefore there's a less likelihood that there will actually be milk that's tameh. On the other hand here, he has no idea what you're going to do with the milk, and therefore he might have incentive or the possibility of mixing in milk that's tameh. So even if you think over here that there's a problem of the tameh milk being mixed in, that may not be true when it is already made into cheese. So in the end, the problem with chalav akum is that we have no way to test if they mix in non-kosher milk into the milk. And based on that, you can't drink chalav akum. The only way you can drink Kalev Akum is if you have somebody spotting the Akum and you know that it was kept under watch or watchful eye the whole time. Now that can be accomplished in one of two ways. They could have a Jew that's sitting there and make it into Chalav Yisrael and ensure that the process from beginning to end, there's no way that somebody could mix it in from the time that it was milked and the time that it reaches the shelves, either because it's an enclosed process or because there's somebody watching in those cases. But there is possibly another way to ensure that. That's what we've been speaking about all along, which is if you have some sort of organization that ensures the purity of the milk and the farmers are mirtat, they have fear of being caught. That's either because they're professionals. If they get caught, they're going to lose their license or people won't buy from them anymore. Or because there's a governmental agency that ensures that whatever they do is correct. And if they get caught changing that, then they're going to lose their ability to sell and lose the government license. Like the FDA in America, which ensures that milk is 100% cow's milk. It's guaranteed based on the government inspections, and people are afraid to not abide by that. So there are those, including Rav Moshe Feinstein, who wrote in a tshuva, that you could possibly rely on that for Chalav Akum, because it's the equivalent of all these cases before. We spoke about an uman, an expert, or a person who's a professional who's afraid of losing his license, or being caught by some institution that can penalize him. So therefore, he will abide by the rules. And you can assume that abiding by the rules gets you what you want, because his interests are aligned with our interests. And therefore, it would be deemed as if it is Chalav Yisrael because of that. And Rav Moshe has two tshuvas. In one tshuva, he says that the FDA help out in these situations and make it that it has the equivalent of Chalav Yisrael. But then he had a question that was sent to him by a cheder, a yeshiva ketana, that was asking him if they had a choice between buying Chalav Yisrael and buying Chalav Akum that was under the FDA, which Rav Moshe and another tshuva had said was fine. He said, clearly you should buy Chalav Yisrael. First of all, for chinuch reasons, it's important. And he says in the end, even using the FDA is a dispensation, and you're better off having Chalav Yisrael than using such a dispensation. Therefore, he says then, for sure, you have to buy Chalav Yisrael, even though it costs more. So despite his willingness to say that, okay, with the FDA, when he came to make a decision about what to drink, he said that he would give priority to buying Chalav Yisrael, even though it was more expensive. All right, Vapat. Here, speaking about bread, there's a gzera of pat akum. Now we have to figure out what happened to this gzera pat akum, but there is a gzera pat akum. Amar Rav Kana, Amar Rav Yochanan, pat lo hutra b'beitin. The pat was never reversed, or never did beitin allow pat akum to be mutar. Miklal de'ika man d'shori. That means or implies that someone else thinks that it's okay. If Rav Kahana has to come along and tell you that pat was never allowed by Beit Din or reversed, this gezeira or takana patakum, that means that somebody believes that it was reversed. In, there is. The Chiyatar of Dimi. So here you have Rav Kahana speaking the name of Rav Yochanan. Now you have Rav Dimi who comes from Eretz Yisrael with a memra and says, Pamachat, Yatsa Rabbi Lusadeh. Rabbi went out to the field. He brought before him pat that was made in a furnace. That was like a sa'ah worth of bread. It means a large amount of bread, and it would look great. Amarabi, kama na'ah pat zo. How beautiful is this bread? Ma'ra'u chachamim lo sra. Why did the chachamim make pat akum asur? Ma'ra'u chachamim? What do you mean? Why did they do this? Mishum chadnut. Mishum chadnut. We know why they made it asur. It's because they didn't want people to intermarry. Ela ma'ra'u chachamim lo sra basadeh. Why did they make it asur when you're out in the field, when there's no problem of socialization? Kizvurima'am, people who were there thought, Hitir Rabbi Apat. The Rabbi then, based on what he was saying then, thought that Pat Akum Basadeh was okay. Velohi, Rabbi Lohitir et Apat. That's not true. He was just speaking out loud. He was talking out loud about it, but he wasn't giving a psak alocha. He wasn't saying that it is mutar. He was saying that maybe the Chachamim should have considered that in the Sadeh, you don't have these problems, it should be mutar. Rabbi Yosef, Hitim, Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda Amar, Lo kachaya maseh. That was not the incident that took place. Amru, Pamachad alach Rabbi lemakom echad, Rabbat tachuk the Talmidim. He went to this place and he saw that the Talmidim were struggling because there was no bread there. There was no kosher bakery in the place, and the Talmidim were struggling because they couldn't afford bread. Rabbi, Ein kan palter? There is no bakery over here? Kesvuri ma'am lomar palter oveid kochavim. He was asking, there's no bakery, there's no non-kosher bakery over here? Who omar la palter Israel? His intention, what he was saying was, is there no kosher bakery over here that they're so desperate? And now, Amar Rav Chelbo, Afilu Aman Damar Paltar Ove Kuchavim, Lo Aman El Deleka Paltar Yisrael. Person who says that the bakery of the non-Jews is Mutar, that's only true when there's no Jewish bakery that's there. Of a Makom Dika Paltar Yisrael, Lo. But in a place where there is a Jewish baker or bakery, then you can't opt to go into the non-kosher bakery over the kosher bakery. So here, embedded in this, is an assumption that those that were matir, based on that second story of Rabbi, were matir non-kosher bakeries at commercial level. If you have commercial production of bread, that is allowed to be eaten, and you can understand why you might distinguish over here, because by pat palter, there's less issue of chatnut, because you're just buying it at a commercial level. You're not getting engaged with the non-Jew on a social level or interaction level. It's simply a business transaction, which is I'm buying bread from the bakery. And that will not cause the problem of chadnut. And based on that, you would say that palter of Ovdei Chochamim is exempted. And along comes Rabbi Chelbo and says, those people that made a mistake and thought that Rabbi was matir, palter, Ovdei Chochamim, they would only say that when there's only a non-Jewish bakery there, but no kosher bakery alternative. If there is a kosher bakery alternative, then they would not allow you to eat pat palter of the Ovdei Chochamim. Now we have, on top of that, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Afilo Man Damar Paltar Ovdei Chochamim. Even the one who says that non-Jewish bakeries are okay, Hani Milei Basadeh, that's only out in the field. Aval Ba'ir Lo Mishum Chatnut. In the city, we would not allow it because of the problem of intermarriage. Being out in the field, it's either a one-time thing, it's not something that happens on a regular basis, and therefore you don't have to worry about them being pulled in socially and intermarrying. Whereas in the city, even if you say Pat Palter is mutar in the fields, you're not going to see it in the city, because that will lead to intermarriage or socialization that will lead to intermarriage, because it's now available in the city. And if you're buying it from them and interacting with them, that'll bring a certain amount of closeness between you, and that closeness will lead to the wrong things. So Rabbi Yochanan narrows the scope of Pat Palter, the heter Pat Palter. So does Rabbi Chelbo. Rabbi Chelbo narrows it to only when there's no Jewish bakery. Rabbi Yochanan only does it in a case where it's out in the field, in a place where there's no problem with socialization, or it's only a temporary or happenstance type of interaction, rather than regular interactions, which would be more problematic. Now, you could read Rabbi Yochanan as being built on top of Rabbi Chelbo. In that case, Rabbi Yochanan is being machmir, that even when there is a het there to eat pat palter, that's only true b'sadeh. And even when there is only pat ovdei chochamim, that's only true in the sadeh, not in the city. Seemingly, that's the way that the Rambam read it. The Ramban says that that's not the right way to read it. And based on the Rif, he suggests that the way to read this here is that Rabbi Yochanan is an independent statement. Has nothing to do with Rabbi Chelbo. It's actually an additional kula, which is that Rabbi Chelbo is a kula, which is that you can eat pat palter of an Ovdei Chochamim when there is no pat Yisrael around. And Rabbi Yochanan adds on an additional kula, which is even if there is pat Yisrael around, pat palter of an Ovdei Chochamim can be eaten in the sadeh because over there there's no problem of katnut. Aibu avi manchit v'achil pat a bay mitzray. Aibu used to go and eat his pat akum of bay mitzray on the borders. So whether he was eating on the border between the city and the fields, or on the borders in the middle of the fields, Amar lehu Rova, v'yitem Rav Nachman b'Yitzchak. So Rova said, some say it's Rav Nachman b'Yitzchak, lo tishto b'hadei. You cannot speak with him, or you cannot interact with him. He's eating non-kosher bread, he's eating the bread of the Akum, and that was restricted by the Chachamim. How could he do that? Now, if he is out in the Beit Mitzray, why is that a problem? We just said before that there is a dispensation for eating pat akum in the sadeh. So the Rishonim come up with different reasons as to what Aibo was doing wrong. One possibility is that the sadot they were speaking about were sadot that were far away from the city. Over here, Aibo was going right to the borders between the city and the fields, or in the fields there that were close to the city, and that's how he was abrogating the heter of Rabbi Yochanan. Others suggest that he was eating pat akum, real pat akum, not pat palter. He wasn't eating it from a commercial bakery. He was eating it from a balabait, and that's why they were upset at him. Others still suggest that it wasn't even a shurat adin. It was lifnimi shurat adin, which was that Aibo was a talmud chacham, and a talmud chacham of that stature should not be taking up these dispensations and eating pat akum and going out to the sadeh to escape the takanat chachamim, but rather he should be abiding by the takanot chachamim and eat pat Yisrael, not pat akum. So for all those possible reasons, they penalized him and said, lo shtish tayi badei, that people should not interact with him or speak to him. But again, as we noted before, the fact that that was the knas and not nidui seems to indicate that it wasn't a full-fledged violation, but rather only a violation either in the spirit of the law or a violation that was in an instance or a situation where pat had become mutar, or pat ovdei chochamim was really mutar. Now that leaves us in a difficult bind as to what happened to Pat Akum over here. It's a very strange Gemara. Gemara has a statement that Pat Akum is a sur, and the heter never came about. It was never released by a Beit Din. Says, is that really true? If you're saying that, that means that somebody did believe that Parakum was released. Well, if they do believe Parakum was released, then all of a sudden we have all these Amorim giving qualifications or explaining it. Where do you have ever a Gemara that explains the discarded opinion? Here you have the opinion that Parakum was Mutar, and now that's a discarded opinion. It was a mistaken assumption in Rabbi's position, and then all of a sudden Amorim are trying to explain that position. Why would they even bother to explain that position? It was all mistaken and on the wrong premise. And it's even stranger because Rabbi Yochanan's the Bala Memra here that says that it was never released. The Takanat Chachamim with regard to Parakum, and he's the one here commenting and saying that if you do eat Pat Palter, these are the conditions of it. So it almost seems to me there's a contradiction in the position of Rabbi Yochanan. The Rishami says explicitly that they were matir the takana of Parakum because of Chayi Nefesh, which isn't clear what was the trigger for that or how was the process done. But that was done in a Beit Din that undermined the original Beit Din's Gzira. But that's simply the Amuraim looked the other way or allowed it to take place because of the Chayi Nefesh issue. The additional question we'd have to ask is, does the Bavli agree with that? Or is the Bavli working against that Yushalmi or not with the assumption of the Yushalmi? Though again, based on the continuation of the Gemara here, it seems to be that they're arguing about Pat Palter that was being eaten, which seems to indicate that there was some semblance of what Yushalmi said embedded in the Bavli statement over here. Number two is the story here with Aibo. Why were they only saying don't speak to him as a Knas? If he was really violating an Isur Drabanan of Patakum, they should put him into Nidoy. Why didn't they do that? From all those pieces of the puzzle, Rishonim start to say that there must have been a Heter or Patakum must have been released. You can see that starting in the Bavli Tosafot that says, Mi de Kamar Patlo who tried to bait in. Says here, from the fact that it says that the Beit Din was not Matir Patakum, implicit in that is that they could have been. Alma lo pashat isuro. From that you conclude that the Isur never spread, was never accepted by the majority of the people. Umikan samchu atalechol pat shel ovdei kochavim. Why do we eat Patakum today? It's because the Gezera never took hold. So even though there was a Takanat Chachamim, Gezerat Chachamim, and it was never reversed, but the point is that they could have reversed it. The implications of the fact that they could have reversed it shows you that the people didn't accept it. And if the people didn't accept it, then it's not a takana or gzera that goes into effect, because we have a principle that a takana or gzera that's put in effect and is not taken up by the majority of Klal Yisrael. That's what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok say. Ein gozrim gzera l'tzibur, elim kein rov ha'tzibur yecholim lamod bo. Unless the majority of the tzibur can hold on to it and comply with it. Majority of the Sibur does not comply with it, that's evidence that they can't. If they can't comply with it, it does not take effect. So that's what the Bali Tosafot say, that it never really took effect. And that's why we, today, go ahead and eat Parakum, despite the fact that it seemingly is an Isur over here. And he says we even have more evidence of that, which is later on in Daf Lamed Zayin Lamed Chet, where we discuss about Shemen, where the Beit Din of Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah was Matir Shemen. Over there the Gemara says they would have been Matir Lechem, but they didn't want to be called the Kula Beit Din. They didn't want to be called the Reform Beit Din that was allowing everybody to do whatever they wanted. So they weren't Matir. But that was the only reason they weren't Matir. Implying again that there was an ability to do it. And the Bavli Tosafot now speculate, Vachara bo Beit Din acher vehitirua. Even though the Beit Din of Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah didn't do it, another Beit Din later on came and released it and undid it. That's one way to deal with it. That's the Bavli Tosafot over here, suggesting that it never really took hold, this gezerah or takana. Since it never really took hold, it wasn't a really binding gezerah. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah could have undone it, but he didn't want to have the bad name of being the matir of everything. But Tosafot say that implies that some Beit Din later on did come and be matir it. And that's why we eat Pat Akum today, and we don't worry about Pat Akum. Others suggest that Pat Akum was never released from the Isra of the takana, but people saw that the Am was having a hard time with it, because it's Chayi Nefesh. Pat is such a basic thing, and not being able to eat Pakakum was causing tremendous burdens on the people, so they would not be matir it outright. But on the other hand, if someone ate it, they would not restrict them, and they would not be mochiach them, because they realized that it was a serious issue or a difficulty, and the people weren't able to hold up to the Gzerah. And so based on that, they have this quasi-heter of Patakum, which is that even though Parakum is a sur, nevertheless they understood that the Gzera was too hard maybe for the Am to keep it. Therefore, even though it might still be intact, we don't enforce it, we don't have people criticize those that do it or chastise those that eat pakakom, because we understood that it was very difficult for the Am. And the Ritva even suggests that the reason was given because of the fact that the first Beit Din's Gezerah never really took hold. And out of respect for them, they said that that which Rabbi said, that it was Beheter, the pot, was a Taot. But in reality, it wasn't a mistake, but it was just to give some sort of deference to that first Beit Din, because their Gezerah never really took hold on the Am as a whole. And from the fact that the Chachamim penalized Aibu for eating the pot akum, that shows you the countervailing force to the fact that if you do believe that the pot akum or the Gezerah was either undermined, reversed, or never really took hold, nevertheless, you still see that the Chachamim were machmir or careful about it. And that's what we see in the Halacha, that Pat Yisrael is preferred in any situation, especially during the Aseret Yemei Tshuva. Even if you use the dispensation all year round, you shouldn't use it during that period of time. And that means that, really, according to many of these Rishonim, the Gezerah or the Takana pot is still somewhat intact, either fully intact, but the Am was noiv het there, either because of Chayi Nefesh or their inability to hold onto it or stay with it, or because it never really was nitpashe, and therefore, according to the Balei Tosafot, there was actually a heter gamur on here, will mean that you have different views as to what the status of pat akum is today. Then, does that mean that the Ikar Adin pat akum is really a sur, or pat paltar, which is what the Ramah is matir? He doesn't allow you to eat the breads of a balabayit akum, but he does allow you to eat pat paltar from the commercial bakeries. You're allowed to eat pat akum. Nevertheless, it is a quasi heter, or something that is not the best way to go about it. And therefore, people who are Makbid and Pat Yisrael have a lot to stand on. And in addition to that, the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, brings down that during the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, even people who eat Pat Palter all year round should abstain from eating a Pat Palter during that period of time, because that is a period of time where we hold ourselves to a higher standard. We try to do things in a better way. And that would apply even to Pat Palter. And therefore, someone should desist from eating. If they eat pat palter all year, they shouldn't eat it then. And by this, what's say over here? Umishni is harbin pat shell of de kochamim. Someone only eats pat Yisrael, and they're eating with another person who does eat pat akum. They don't have to be so careful, and they can eat out of a single plate, or they can eat it out of a single serving dish. Because apopish, the tam of the pat akum gets into that pat Yisrael, don't have to be machmir le'asor ayedei tarobet. You don't have to make it asor ayedei a mixture or a flavor exchange. That might come down to a fundamental chakira in Isurim deoraita and Isurim derabanan. When something is asur deoraita, like nevela or other objects that are asur mi deoraita, those items are inherently a cheftza of isur. The chefetz itself imbued in it is this isur, and therefore if it flavors something else, that flavor passes the isur to the other item. On the other hand, the chachamim don't have an ability to change the status of an item. If the bread is bread and the bread is kasher according to the Torah, chachamim can't come along and say that it's not kosher bread. It is kosher bread. No matter what they say, it will be kosher bread. What they can do is restrict the gavra, the individual, from eating it and saying, even though it's kosher bread, nevertheless, we restrict you from eating this bread. And that's the way Takanat Ogzerot Chachamim work. Even though this might be okay, midoraita, we're telling you, midorabanan, we don't want you doing this. We don't want you eating this item. We don't want you drinking this item. In that case, the Isser is not in the Chepta. The Isser is on the gavra. And that means here that if you have pat akum, the pat akum itself is not inherently asur. The Isser is on the individual to eat the pat akum. That means that flavor is imparted from the pat akum to pat Yisrael. It's not a problem. Bread is kasher. The bread has no problem with it. And when it passes the flavor to the other bread, it's also not problematic. The gavra is not allowed to eat that bread. So that's the restriction. It's a restriction of a gavra, not a restriction of a chepza. And that's the din derabanan. And therefore, the Balei Tosafot over here, and that might be the explanation for it, say that if you have pat akum that came through tarovet, through flavor exchange, you don't have to be worried about that. You don't have to withhold yourself from eating it, because tarovet, or flavoring of pat akum, does not make your pat Yisrael or anything that you're eating into isur. All right, with that, we'll stop at the two dots on the bottom of Lamed Hei Amud Bet.